Good morning and welcome to Shattering Myths, a program devoted to the most important, fastest growing, and now largest segment of society. To those of you who have come to realize that the world's political, religious, economic, media, and most academic institutions are corrupt, and even to those of you who are still clinging to the military as if it were the lone trustworthy and beneficial human institution, this program is devoted to demonstrating, proving to you, that all of these human institutions are counterproductive, that they're rotten to the core, and that none of them can be fixed. Our phone number, if you would like to participate in this discussion anytime over the next 2 hours, is 877-300-7645. At the end of our program yesterday, Scott, the producer of Shattering Myths, was discussing why he thought that America has made this amazing transition, not amazing in a good sense, amazing in a really bad sense, transition, from the recognition in the 1960s that our political and military leadership's intervention and invasion of Vietnam was counterproductive, that it was making a bad situation worse, that it wasn't protecting American freedom, it wasn't providing for American rights, it was just destroying and killing people, as I say, making a bad situation in Vietnam much worse. And collectively, most Americans came to realize that it was a tragic mistake for us to be there, and that our military wasn't providing the service. And yet we've gone from that point to today, where the reverence and devotion to the military in America is pervasive, overwhelming, I mean, to the point of being absolutely gag-me disgusting. And of course, nothing's changed. The military has gotten worse, not better. So why did this occur?
Yeah, and I didn't have time to say it on the show yesterday because we wrapped up. It was at the last segment, and I think it happened because of, if you look at the way that the soldiers and everything were treated, people felt bad about that. The soldiers, most of them were just pulled there. They were told to go there. They didn't really have a choice. They didn't. When they came back, there was a lot of people. You hear all these stories and all these things where, you know, people were spitting on them and, you know, calling them baby killers, and, you know, some of them were. So people felt bad about that, and rather than actually looking at, you know, and calling out the bad parts, they did like a 180, and now the soldiers are good, the soldiers are great, it's, you know, but war is still bad, but the soldiers, they're good, they're great, and I think that's it, because my whole life, I grew up, and people told me how great military people were, and that, you know, it was really bad how we treated the soldiers and stuff like that, and so they took what they were saying, and rather than, they now made the soldier, if you attack the military, you're attacking the soldier, and not the person. It's not the person that tells the soldier what to do. If you attack the military now, you're attacking soldiers.
Yeah. And they've tied soldiers. I'm going to agree with you to a large degree here, Scott. I think that your point is that that America was made in the media, really, and by politicians.
Yeah.
And to a large degree by propaganda from the military, to feel proud of the military by what was called shock and awe in the bombing of Iraq. And by the, it was Gulf War I, and George W. Bush's claim that that Saddam Hussein was a bad guy, that needed to be thwarted from invading an American ally, Saudi Arabia, and America used shock and awe, and after mounting this major offensive, in a matter of days, we had the indefensible Iraqi army on the run. And so Americans and its American soldiers and their weapon systems were all for the first time seen as victorious, when in the past in Vietnam they lost that war. And so they were celebrated as America felt good. It had won a war. America's equipment beat the Iraqi military, and we were proud of ourselves. And then the way when that occurred, which, by the way, was a wrong reaction, when that occurred, then there was this feeling of, you know, maybe we treated the Vietnam veterans badly, and we're going overboard celebrating the Gulf Storm veterans favorably because of our collective guilt for the way that we treated the Vietnam vets. But you pointed out something that is really important here. Well, there's a whole lot of issues. One of which is, in Vietnam, the problem was not with the enlisted. It wasn't with the average vet that came home. They were drafted.
Yeah.
They had no choice. They were drafted. They lost their freedom. They were indoctrinated. They were told what to do. Most of them despised it. You know, drugs were rampant. Any means of escape. It was a horrible situation we put them into, but we didn't give them any choice. There was no free will, no expression of free will. They were drafted. And they were ordered to go. And so to blame those who were forced to go under penalty of incarceration, that was grotesquely unfair. Now, at the time, Americans were rightly disgusted by the political leadership that had sent men there, and by the military leadership that was using body counts to determine, to declare that we were winning an unwinnable war. And the rhetoric from Washington about why we were there became laughable, and people awakened to the realization that we have no right to be there. We have no business being there, that we're not making the situation better, that this is hopeless.
Well, and you also mentioned something that they use the media propaganda. They create these names for these things: Operation Shock and Awe, Desert Storm, and
right.
And Enduring Freedom. You know, and it's so if you say I think Operation Enduring Freedom is absolutely moronic.
Shock and awe was moronic, but just disgusting.
But the point is that then they can, because it's named
Speaking
Enduring
of death
Freedom,
and destruction.
Well, because it's named Enduring Freedom, what, do you have a problem with freedom?
I have a problem with Iraq the way it is now. Yeah, I do. I tell you what, Iraq before America's invasion was infinitely superior to Iraq today. Yeah, I've got a real problem with what we have caused to endure in Iraq, and it most certainly ain't freedom.
And then the other
unless
thing,
it's freedom to terrorize, freedom to kill, freedom to commit mass murder. I mean, we've got that. Mm-hmm. Freedom to invade a neighboring country and start a war there. We've got that. Freedom to give Iraq to Iran. Yeah, we certainly made that endure.
And then the other thing is, again, it goes back to media. Look at your movies. You're getting you get movies like Saving Private Ryan, the latest
one, the soldier and heroic and doing
Black Hawk Down,
marvelous thing. Yes,
the Black Hawk Down. This latest one with the sniper, American Sniper. I mean, you're getting all these things out there that are glorifying something, and people are just looking at the glory.
The movie about the killing of Bin Laden, and the special ops being elevated to the status of superhero.
Exactly. And so you're getting that, and I think that's what's turned it. And now they don't want you to pay attention to the military as a whole.
Military crews armed to the teeth and coming in two helicopters, killing a man in his pajamas surrounded by his wives. And, we are so heroic.
But they don't want you to look at the military as a whole and then look at the people that run that military, because those are the people that you should have a real problem with, because they're putting these people in positions that are horrible. They're the ones telling these people where to go. And then at everything, it's not, let's give it up to our generals of the U.S. military. No, it's let's give it up to our men and women of the armed forces.
Well,
so they're keeping people.
We have to be careful here, because there was a period of time where it was not appropriate to praise the those who were drafted. And it was never, even in Vietnam, even though they were drafted, they should never have been celebrated when they returned. They should never have been praised for what they did, because what they did was murderous. They destroyed a country. They should not have been praised, but they should not have been harassed and condemned at the drafted, enlisted level. At the officer level, they chose to go.
And
leadership level, then absolutely spit on them.
You're telling people what to do.
Scream at them. They're part of the problem. At the senior officer level, the politicized military, absolutely show them every manner of disgust. At the time of Vietnam, we reacted improperly as a nation to rank and file who had been sent there, who did not want to go, who were forced to go. And we were correct in our disgust with the officers and politicians. But unfortunately, America having lost its previous two wars.
You shouldn't praise the military anyways, ever.
Of course not, ever.
What does the military do?
Even in World War II, because if you look at the way we propagated that war, if you look at how we sacrificed 1,000 men for every soldier, every sailor, that the Japanese killed in Pearl Harbor, that we sacrificed 1,000 for everyone they killed, turning 3,000 into 300,000 dead. You can't look at that as heroic either, even though the reaction to the returning veterans, at least at the enlisted level, the draftees in Vietnam, was inappropriate. They didn't choose to be there. They shouldn't have been condemned. They should not have been paraded through the streets as returning heroes, because they were used to make a bad situation worse. But they should not have been condemned as they were in the 1960s. The military, brass, the senior, those who chose to go, those who led the charge, and those who sent them there, Lyndon Baines Johnson, and after him, Richard Nixon, and all of the congressmen and senators who justified them being there, they should all be condemned. Now, the situation changed considerably with the Desert Storm. First of all, just as in Vietnam, of course, every aspect of Desert Storm was based upon a lie. And just as in the case of Vietnam, our invasion was counterproductive. We'd have been much better off without the invasion. And just in the case of Vietnam, the invasion of Desert Storm put America in a vastly more vulnerable position, as we're witnessing today. And it led to horrific consequences that the politicians never thought through. But this idea that America was so thirsty to feel good again about itself, that America, having lost two wars, felt good about the mass murder that it perpetrated through shock and awe, and celebrated that tells you that America has lost its way. And now the reverence for the military following shock and awe and its perceived victory, which turned out to be a horrible defeat for America and Desert Storm, is pervasive both sides of the aisle in politics. And yet today no one is drafted. There ought to be absolutely no celebration of anyone, nor any thanks. They chose this as a job, and their job is wholly counterproductive. We have Glenn on the line. I'd like to hear your perspective on this, Glenn. I know that my views on the military are not common. They're not popular. But I don't think you can raise an argument that is informed and rational against it, but...
It's funny. In my generation, in 1978 and 79, I was at enormous state university on an ROTC scholarship, you know, and we weren't baby killers at that point. We were just sort of dorks and kind of semi-fringe if you're in the ROTC at that time. Mm-hmm. But let's not forget the great sentiment-changing media operation known as Grenada, right, where the news crews were on the beach while filming the Marines. Sure, now wait a minute.
Can you imagine Ronald Reagan thought that you know, one way to justify my massive expenditure on the military and taking our Navy to 600 ships, which, you know, I just think, you know, this notion that Ronald Reagan won the Cold War and defeated the Soviet Union, he actually defeated both of us. You know, it's interesting. He liberated Russia. It broke the back of communism, so the move liberated Russia and enslaved America to mountains of debt. But, it's just amazing that Ronald Reagan decided that he would use the U.S. military to invade Grenada.
Right.
Laughable. I mean, it's disgusting, but it's laughable in a way. You know, America's Americans have got this notion, and it's stated in the American Sniper movie. You know, I'm glad to kill on behalf of the world's greatest nation. And then you have to wonder, Glenn, greatest in what? We're certainly not the greatest in freedom because we incarcerate a higher percentage of our population than any nation on earth. That's the antithesis of freedom. We're not the world's leader in prosperity because we're more in debt as a percentage of GDP and in aggregate dollars of any nation on earth. We're certainly not the most moral nation because we're the world's largest consumer of illegal and mind-altering drugs. You know, we certainly aren't the most peaceful nation on earth because we're the nation with the largest military and we're the nation most prone to invade other countries. We certainly aren't the most just nation on earth because we're a nation that's in complete wholesale conflict with its constitution and no longer caring about due process or judicial review. We're willing to kill people and incarcerate them without bothering with such things and to spy on people without just cause. We aren't the greatest nation on earth unless you define great as all of those negatives. Welcome back to Shattering Myths. Yes, today we're in a very different situation. We Americans are conditioned to thinking, to believing, not thinking, but believing that their freedoms are somehow preserved by America's military invading places like Afghanistan and Iraq and now Syria, as well as aiding and abetting the bombing of places like Libya and Somalia and Yemen and Pakistan, that we are somehow protecting America and protecting American freedoms. How do you get there?
Anna? I want to point something out about how that conditioning, there's the people behind that conditioning.
Okay.
Are you there? Yeah.
Yeah.
I mentioned Grenada before. In about 1986, Clint Eastwood started a movie called Heartbreak Ridge, which is a semi-comedic, movie about...
Oh, you faded out, Glenn. Well, we have a bad connection.
Can you hear me?
Yeah,
hello?
I can hear you now. Heartbreak Ridge.
Okay. Yeah, Heartbreak Ridge. And so it basically reprised the Grenada invasion because they go onto this island and they rescue these people in medical school. It was basically a semi-comedic regret. Now, this same person, Clint Eastwood, you know, Dirty Harry, Sudden Impact, mm-hmm. you know,
An American hero because of his acting ability. Right. So it's like John Wayne, an American hero, because he's an actor.
Right. Well, he's the director of American Sniper, supposedly. Now, I wonder about the invoking of Clint Eastwood as the director of American Sniper, because I saw Clint Eastwood interviewed by Barbara Walters a number of years ago, and he was slow even then. So that, it seems to me they're probably propping him up like the way the Catholic Church props up an aging pope, you know, just to get his name in there. So propaganda.
Yeah,
so this seems like a big, you know, with the propaganda, the names, the influencers. How do we do it? This is how, with a media machine that programs us. That's how.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's what's amazing is the integration today. You know, you know that I'm not a conspiracy theorist, even though I have probably done more research into the basis of the most prevalent conspiracy, which is the that of the Illuminus, derived from Adam Weishaupt's writing in the Order of the Illums. I've probably done more research and more reading and more study on its origins than has most any conspiracy theorist. But with that said, I must tell you that there is an absolute collusion in the media. And that collusion is impossible to meet because they all use the same words to describe the same events the same way. And no matter how reckless, ignorant, or irrational their wording and presentation is, they all flock together. They're all in lockstep. And what's interesting is that there is almost no politician that's willing to confront them. On the Republican side, there's a tendency for Republicans to lash out at the liberal leaning of the media, but they won't ever challenge any specific article. And so you have an integration of politically correct politicians and the politically correct media in concert with the origins of political correctness today, which is academia, dominating America. It's become our national religion. And it's a religion taught at universities and high schools and even lower schools. And it's an indoctrination that people just can't get away from.
Well, and it's so extensive that, like, at the common social level, I mean, you have, like, old saws like, you know, religion and politics. There are two things that you can't discuss at parties or bars or whatever.
Yeah.
But, I mean, people are afraid to say anything that is controversial. If they meet with the slightest resistance when making an assertion, they immediately back down because they don't want to be.
Let me give you a great example. It's also now in corporate America. You can put corporate America in with academia, the media, and politicians, as well as, by the way, the media, the military. You can put corporate America in that regard. Corporate America will do everything to appear politically correct and enlightened. And there is not a corporation in the country, other than maybe two or three that are wacko right-wing Christian nutcases like Hobby Lobby and Chick-fil-A, they will all take a stunningly stupid, politically correct view of everything and preach it within their corporate culture. So we even have corporations that are part of this. You know, it was interesting. Yesterday, the Seattle Seahawks, on their homepage, put out an image of Russell Wilson, their quarterback. And I happen to like Russell Wilson, but Russell Wilson got super gag me with a spoon religious at the end of his poor performance during the game, with the exception of the last 3 minutes and a couple of minutes of overtime. And, you know, he's screaming, crying, God is good, as if God had something to do with his four interceptions at the beginning of the game or his completed passes at the end of the game. And, you know, he's wallowing in his tears. And so Seattle puts out an image of him with the tears rolling down his eyes and a quote from Martin Luther King, which they attribute to Martin Luther King on Martin Luther King Day, talking about, you know, the first step in a long journey and, you know, and overcoming obstacles, this sort of thing. And right. People had a conniption fit over it. I mean, here was Seattle even couldn't even cite right to Martin Luther King with an African-American quarterback who overcame challenges, who is exhibiting his Christian faith, which was Martin Luther King, on Martin Luther King Day, attributing the quote to Martin Luther King. And they couldn't even do that. The Seattle Seahawks not only pulled it, but they wallowed all over themselves in apologies.
I mean, oh, my God, that's pathetic. Number one, it's pathetic that they should be besieged over it. And then, two, it's even more pathetic that they cave immediately on it.
Oh, it's just come on, folks.
It's all about being tough. That's all about being tough. You know, but rhetorically, they can't manifest any spine whatsoever.
Oh, goodness. Yeah, you just shake your head and you say, you know, this delusion is pervasive. And Jefferson warned us about it. He listed the an established military as the single greatest threat to liberty. But he didn't just speak of it as a threat to liberty in the sense that a military has power and can enforce a nation with a strong established military can enforce its will on its people so that they can't rebel. He went into detail about the problems of an established military, and he spoke about the concentration of power amongst a few people being a problem. He talked about the squandering of money being one of the problems, but he said the biggest problem was deception. And that all manner of lies foisted under the notion of patriotism would be promoted with an established military. And that it is those misconceptions, those delusions that really proved to be the undoing of free societies. When a free society establishes a command and control military and begins to praise it, that those delusions become the undoing of that free society.
And it's funny because Jefferson paid a price for his honesty, too. I mean, at the end of his life, he was not in great financial shape and he found himself unable to sell Monticello and that sort of thing, you know. So think of Jefferson, they don't realize this guy actually, you know, went through, he had probably fell into some disfavor over all that.
Yeah, and I'm not going to judge Jefferson on his financial failure.
I'm complimenting him.
Because there's so many things that that he
didn't go wrong.
He tried to build a farm on top of a high hill because he just loved the great vistas, and he devoted so much of his energy not only to establishing the University of Virginia, but of also trying to direct a country and to keep the country away from a national religion. Unfortunately, we now have one, political correctness, and away from an established military and away from federalization. He was not a federalist, which is what we've become now. We are not a collection of states anymore. We are a federal government. States' rights are trampled by federal dictates. And he was extraordinarily articulate in that regard, and he spent a lot of time studying the great day issues. He was the first person I have read who, other than Clement in the second or third century, that realized that Paul was a complete imposter and that his words were an absolute discord with Yeshua. I mean, so the man was a thinker. He had his dode, David foibles. I mean, he was having a sexual relationship with one of his slaves. And so
he had a rival in Washington too. So because supposedly the architectural design differences between Mount Vernon and Monticello, like a Washington and Mount Vernon in a more Grecian style, and he did Monticello more Roman. Romanesque
time. Yeah, Monticello is Palladian. It's Palladio was a Roman that sought to revise the Greek style and Roman buildings.
Right.
Mount Vernon is a federal construct as opposed to what's called Greek Revival, the Palladian architecture. But, you know, the fact is that that they were night and day different, and that Jefferson was opposed to religion, and Washington was syrupy religious. You know, his Freemasonry absolutely held sway over his life. It was his the driving force in his life. You know, Washington was a military man, and Jefferson was opposed to an established military.
Right.
They Washington was a federalist, and Jefferson was a rights man.
Supposedly, the placement of Monticello was there, you know, somewhat to goad George Washington in plain sight of Mount Vernon. But anyway, I don't know.
The locations are completely different in that Mount Vernon is sitting in the lowlands on a river, overlooking a river, and Mount Vernon is it's really not on a mountain, but it's on a hill overlooking the Charlottesville, Virginia area where he built the University of Virginia.
They had a rivalry of some sort. That's all I know, and that's all tied into it.
Yeah. I personally like the perspective that Monticello provides. I'd like to conclude our commentary on the transition and our view of the military with the two thoughts. One is that anything is universal. Liberal and conservative, Republicans and Democrats in America. When it is pervasive and sports and academia and politics throughout even corporate America providing homage to and service to the military. When the language is the same consistently and always wrong, then you know that there is a conspiracy underfoot and that people are being indoctrinated via propaganda to an erroneous proposition. And that in the case of America, this proposition that America is the greatest country because our military is a force for good, and that we owe our freedom to our troops and should honor them, is amongst the most disastrous, counterproductive lies, the most poisonous deceptions that has been foisted on this country. Now, with that said, I do want to speak a little bit about Pope Francis. There is news out of his camp that he has been given the right to speak to a joint session of Congress. It'll be the first time that has occurred. I personally, and Pope Francis is visiting the United States in sometime, I don't know if it's late this year or early next year. Later this year, or I think it's later this year that he's visiting the United States. Good God, what in the world is wrong with us? Not only is this man reprehensible, he is a religious leader. To have a religious leader in his religious regalia get up and lecture the U.S. Congress is repulsive. Now, I'm hoping that somebody has misrepresented what has occurred. But if we, as a nation, have authorized the head of the very religious organization that Yahweh considers to be the most vile beast, the most vicious beast in all of human history, to address a joint session of Congress, and a nation that is devoted to the notion, at least was founded on the notion, of not sponsoring any one religion. Oh, my God. I can't imagine anything we could do that would anger God more than, of course, providing military arms to the very enemies of Israel. Now, there are some other issues with this pope. I have long said this man is borderline insane. That You know, they talk about not having all 52 cards in the deck upstairs, or maybe those cards overly shuffled. Don't have all of your oars in the water. Well, this is a man that is missing most of the oars, or at least has no clue what the oars were designed for. Pope Francis, I'm just going to share this as it comes from articles, and we'll comment on it. Pope Francis denounced what he calls ideological colonization of families in the developing world. Now, I'm going to tell you, there is no ideological colonization of families. America is doing a lot to invade other countries. America is trying to shape the world and its image. America is trying to force the world to accept its morality. But as it relates to families, good grief. The only organization that I know that has had a tremendous influence on families worldwide is the Roman Catholic Church. And he says this is occurring in the developing world. That's the last place America, by the way, is trying to colonize families. Where he says progressive Western ideas about birth control and gay rights are increasingly being imposed by groups, institutions, or nations as a condition for development and aid. Now, first of all, if a nation wants to give aid, you know, they ought to have a condition associated with that aid. Now, if the condition is you need to accept homosexuality, now that's pretty weird. Now, but I'm unaware of any condition the United States is imposing on its foreign aid that says you need to accept homosexuality. Now, if the condition on providing aid, which we do, for example, in Syria, is that the aid not be used as a weapon of war, that the aid not be controlled so as to get people to swear their allegiance to a militant group or starve, now that makes perfect sense, and we at least attempt to do that. This man has lost his mind.